I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, my great pleasure now to be talking with Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith. And Chief, welcome back to MSO. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rick. How are you?
Very well, thank you, sir. You know, we're heading towards spring, and hope springs eternal, as they say. But earlier today we had a building collapse, or actually a roof collapse, on Commercial Street in Gloucester, and the name is appropriately named Commercial Street, even though there's a hotel on it. And I was talking with Deputy Fire Chief Tom LaGrande, who was there on the scene as a first responder. And Chief, it brought up a bunch of questions for me in terms of public safety and how this kind of thing is handled. And I wonder if you might tell me in general terms about protocol. You get a call that there's a roof collapse, a building collapse, and so on, and then you automatically think, okay, are there people inside? Is there electricity? Is there gas? That kind of thing. So how does a fire department handle something like that?
Yeah, so our first step in that is determining, you know, what is the call about? You know, if it's collapse, do we have any details about the specific building that we either know off the top of our head due to knowing, you know, what's in our first due areas and so forth. So the dispatchers and the company officers are pre-planning those kind of things in their mind as to the specific address that they're going to and what they know about that area of town and what they might face. And, you know, and then the dispatch portion is, you know, to interrogate, to try to determine, okay, what do we have going on? Do we have known victims in a collapse? Was the business open or closed? Is it a vacant building that's not occupied, not normally used, but hey, maybe we have to worry about somebody that, you know, in there trespassing and that kind of thing. So there's a million questions that go through your mind on it. You know, our standard operating procedure is for those types of calls, depending on what the initial information is. And in this case that, you know, the initial information is that we have a building collapse, a roof collapse, and that it's an unoccupied structure and that there were no reported injuries at the time. So that kind of reduces the amount of apparatus that we're going to send down there initially. We're going to get, because it's closest to headquarters, obviously it's their first due, so that engine is assigned there. And unfortunately, at the time, we had two calls come in at once, so then the dispatcher's stuck with the dilemma of, well, how much do I send to each of these incidents and backfill from the outskirts station? So typically for a call like that, if it sounded like it was an occupied structure, get what we call a full first alarm, which is two engines, a ladder, you know, the rescue, the deputy, and then notifications upon their arrival as to what is the severity of it. Do they need to strike additional alarms, which brings additional resources and personnel? Mm-hmm. So, you know, our first thoughts on those, if it's a collapse, if it's residential, is it commercial, is it occupied, unoccupied, time of day, you know, on arrival, is there a bunch of vehicles there? Are there folks outside that evacuated because they were open? So it's, you know, those kind of things are extremely dynamic based on what it is, where it is, and when it is. So there's no the book answer to, well, right, you do this, then you do that. I mean, that's, you know, fairly common as to the assessment and determination as to what needs to go initially. But after that, it's based on that incident commander's size up as to what is the problem, what resources do you need to resolve the problem. Unfortunately for us in this case, it's a building that's been sitting vacant for a while. They, you know, already had power disconnected from this section of this fairly large building, and that the collapse looks like, it was due to, you know, either an issue with the roof or loading upon the roof, whatever it was, kicked out the sidewall and then knocked the meter off the building and unfortunately broke the pipe loose below the control valve on it, which doesn't help us, and now we just got free-flowing gas. So fortunately most of that was outside, but those are, you know, considerations that are always at the top of the list, is that scene safety for not just the people that may be in the building, but for the responders that we're going to intentionally put inside the building. Are we putting them into, into a hazard that exceeds, you know, that risk management benefit. You know, if we don't know that there's people trapped inside, but we know the place is loaded with gas and it's still electrified, you know, should we be putting first responders in there yet, or do we need to slow down and do some things to try to make that operating environment safer for our folks? Because the last thing we need to do is send, you know, 5-10 people inside the building doing search and rescue work, and it's basically a bomb waiting to go off. You know, that's a bad call. So
yeah,
all those things ride on the shoulders of our deputies when they first arrive to sort it out. You know, they got, you know, 5, 10, 30 seconds to kind of do that process quickly and make those initial assignments and requests for additional resources. So, you know, you got a million things going through your mind quickly, and you got to process them quickly and make the right calls quickly. And there's not a lot of room for error when things are going in a bad direction. If that was a collapse with people inside, mm-hmm. and gas getting in the building, and it was energized, you know, that risk management and risk benefit assessment, it's tough on these guys having to make those calls immediately without, you know, they don't get to sit back in an armchair and quarterback this and take their time. It's right now, make decisions. So,
well, we have an interview.
Today was easy.
We have an interview with Deputy LaGrande, who explains what he did, and it's fascinating to listen to. And one of the things, it brings up a kind of a delicate question for me, and I want to make sure I ask it properly. How much clout, how much power does a fire department have with respect to getting utilities, emergency utility workers on the scene? Because and you do it all the time. I know that inevitably when there's a power line down on the streets that's live or something or other, the fire department is there and the utility company is there almost immediately. So how does that work?
So the utility companies do much like what we do. It's kind of risk analysis based on the circumstance. And if in our estimation there's a life risk, that puts it at what they consider a priority one call for the utilities, whether it be gas or electric. Mm-hmm. And so we have public safety specific numbers to call, that break those things down. So a priority one is a singular number, never changes, been the same for as long as I can recall. And we call National Grid on that number and tell them what our situation is and that it is a life threat in our evaluation, and they respond with the closest appropriate resource. Now, mind you, that could be 5 minutes away or it could be 50 minutes away, depending on, you know, time of day, where their crews are staged, what they might be actively involved in already and can, you know, drop and run off to an emergency piece. So, you know, there's that same dynamic, you know, with them responding as there is with, you know, quote unquote, any emergency responder. You know, if headquarters is all out on a call and something comes in down the street and we're getting that response from a different station or worst case mutual aid, and now they're coming from next door, right? So you're adding time, which obviously is working against us. So utilities have done a pretty good job over the years in kind of making their system work as efficiently to assist us with managing the utilities that are obviously under their control and their purview and their expertise and ability to handle de-energizing the buildings, you know, cutting into the ground to get to their main, to shut their main off in a different manner because the control valves that we have been damaged or removed. You know, we can go in and shut off a breaker panel pretty easily, pull a main on a panel easily. We can shut off the gas valve easily. But if those things are involved in the problem and no longer viable options, then they got to come out and cut the power at the pole. They got to dig up the gas main in the street and clamp that off or find a different valve in the street that they can manage. So, it gets to a, you know, that level to where we can't do anything as first responders to shut those utilities off, and we're totally dependent on them. You know, then yeah, that priority 1, 2, 3 system is a big deal, and obviously we want it to be minutes, and less minutes is better in those instances, because if it's a life threat, you know, we're not going to be able to do a whole lot if a building is energized, mm-hmm. and we can't go into it until they de-energize it.
All right, final question, Chief. Does it work the same with police? Is it a two-way street with police and fire? In other words, they see something and they pull a priority one with you, or you see something and you do it with them?
Yeah, so the, you know, so for police, fire, we both access National Grid and the utilities using the same system for public safety, because not every community's initial first responder is going to be necessarily a firefighter. It may be a police officer that can identify the hazard and that, yeah, there's a life risk, and we need National Grid here on a priority one basis. So they're authorized to do that as well. And, you know, and when it comes to the back and forth between police and fire needing assistance from one or the other, obviously we do that every day. And those things are typically, hey, if it's a life threat, then it's as quick as we can get there safely, and vice versa for the police.
Mm-hmm. Awesome stuff. Thank you, Chief. That's Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.